Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
The Democrats are going to be the last of the institutionalists. This is one reason why I individually or forward, it's like a, it's kind of its own thing. And that Republicans are the anti-institutionalists. And you're in a time when, by the way, the institutions are not exactly kicking ass.
They're not thriving.
They're failing, many of them. In a way, what you need is kind of benign outsiders, but the Democratic Party will be hostile towards even benign outsiders.
Government has not been run very well in decades. Yet, in order to win a Democratic primary or race, you have to have experience running these poorly run institutions.
I made a joke about it in my book, which was that it's that the test is like, how can we be sure that you also will get nothing done? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I forgot about that joke.
Yeah, the people take kind of fake credit for under my watch, these things happened. I passed this bill that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah.
We increase funding to XYZ. He was like, man, that increases every year with or without you, you know?
This week, Zach and I make some bold headline-making predictions for 2022, the year ahead, this week on Forward.
It's 2022.
This is going to be the year.
This is our year, Andrew.
In all seriousness, I tell people close to me that you should try and enjoy yourself this year because next year is going to become... unfortunately, an obsession with 2024, at least politically and culturally.
So
2022 has got to be the year.
This is our year. I was just going to say this is the year we take back the White House, but that's a bad joke.
Yeah, that
doesn't make any sense, but it is our year.
And I'm feeling great about this year. We're going to do some awesome stuff. We're going to build up. So we had some end of year forward party stuff, including a New Year's Eve celebration online that was really invigorating and delightful. So thank you to everyone who's a part of that. We're off to a rousing start.
So it's our 2022 Outlook episode where you, the listener, get to hear Andrew Yang's and mine, if you're interested, predictions for the year.
Yes. What lies ahead in 2022?
And we were pretty... we don't have to dive into last year's predictions, but we weren't that bad last year. We were pretty – our 2021 outlooks were pretty good.
So apparently we predicted it was going to be a shit year, and then it was like ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I had predicted education institutions not going great, which they haven't really fallen, but I think they're still pretty shitty. Yeah. I predicted new media outlets to emerge, and I think Substack's a good example of such. Feeling good about that. There's a couple others, but Substack's probably the big one. Roaring 20s was my prediction last year, and I don't know if it really roared.
The new theme is going to be growflation. That's like the term I'm coining, which I suppose will lead me into our first prediction of the new year.
What we got?
I think inflation is persistent and here to stay. And I think not maybe at this 6% level that we've experienced, but I talked to a macro hedge fund analyst who said that she thinks inflation's here to stay. And here's why, and this made perfect sense to me. is that most firms use something called FIFO accounting, if any of you are a nerd and learned this stuff at some point, which is first in, first out.
First in, first out, yep.
So if you were to take a very, very simple business, like a chair manufacturing business, and you had inventory of, you know, 1,000 chairs in your warehouse, now those chairs were built, and then let's say your prices went up in terms of lumber, which they probably did. So you build some new chairs, but the new chairs being more expensive, it doesn't kick in until you clear the old chairs because you already built those chairs out of wood that was cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen to that firm is that when they sell that 1,001st chair that cost them more, in order to make the same amount of money, they're going to have to charge more.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been like a lag time in the system between what someone's costs have been and when they need to start charging you for their increased costs.
Mm-hmm.
So this analyst said, look, I think a lot of firms have actually started to make these decisions, but there's been a lag time. And so you're going to see it filter through the system in the next number of weeks and months, which made perfect sense to me. What also made sense to me was that there's now some expectation of higher prices among consumers that if you're a business, you can get away with it.
Yeah,
frankly,
that's true.
You know, I walked into a bagel store the other day and they said, hey, we've increased prices because our costs have gone up. Like, hope you're cool with that. You know, I saw
that. Hope you're cool.
Oh, yeah. And then I saw that and I shrugged and was like, I guess I'm cool with that. But you see that in a range of businesses. And so if you were a business who was on the fence, then you'd be like, well, if I raise my prices, my customers will assume it's because I had to. The other thing you're seeing is that a lot of businesses are having a hard time staffing. And so they are giving people raises or higher wages. And I think that's good. But that's also going to result in prices going up for those businesses. So inflation is going to be persistent in 2022. And that's going to put pressure on the Fed to raise interest rates. And the question then would be, how would the market respond to an interest rate increase? And I'm going to suggest it be very, very negative.
Yeah.
So my prediction for 2022 includes the fact that not only will inflation be persistent, but also we're going to see a market correction at some point.
Well, that's not thrilling, but or not optimistic, but I think that checks out. And I think if you're a business, usually when a business jacks up prices, consumers are pissed. You're like, I think they're gouging me, right? But if you're a business and you have the opportunity to raise prices, knowing that your consumers will be like tolerant of it, being like, oh yeah,
this supply podcast, chain issues. Listening to it now costs you $12.
We should charge. Okay, I think that's a good one. Maybe an easy one and a little pessimistic. I'll do an optimistic one. My optimist.
Well, you thought it was an easy one? You're mocking my prediction?
I'm not mocking.
You're saying it's too obvious?
I think it's an obvious one. I don't know if it's obvious. The other thing, I think the press narrative will be interesting. The press narrative, I think, will be that inflation's decreasing, even though it's still kind of high. And I think that's what you kind of said. Like, it might go down a bit, but it's still going to be, we're going to be in post-inflationary environment.
Well, we've had something of an aberrantly low inflation environment for an extended period of time. And then now that inflation's here, most people don't know what to do with it. There have been a lot of parallels drawn between Jimmy Carter and Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
That was my growflation joke because we had stagflation under Carter. It's like, you know, no growth and inflation, and that's a pretty terrible combination. So now we're going to have some kind of growth, but inflation's going to be here. So that's my growflation.
Oh boy, poor Joe. Not a good thing. No one wants to be compared to Carter, I don't think, at least the past number of years. All right, my optimistic 2022 prediction will make our crypto fans happy, make my girlfriend happy. But I think Web3 is going to be more mainstream. It's going to start to mainstream this year. I don't think, before you freak out, my crypto fans who listen to this podcast, I don't think you're probably going to see an NFT bubble pop a bit. I think people are outrageously overpaying for a whole bunch of crypto things. I think anytime you're seeing valuations change massively because someone threw the word crypto or Web3 onto it is usually a sign of a bubble or overhype. I think if you're a coder right now, if you're learning to code, you're being an engineer, you're learning how to code on the blockchain. I think you're going to start to see mainstream innovation. So what do I mean? I wouldn't be surprised if concert tickets or airlines or a lot of these QR codes start just being on the blockchain. I think you start seeing Web3 baked into our everyday lives. And that is a good thing. I think I'm really excited what that looks like. There's a lot of takes on that. I want to dive in, you and me, on this podcast over the next coming weeks and months this year to talk more on Web3. But I do think that's going to be a more of a mainstream thing and not a niche thing.
Wow, man, you're really going out on a limb. No, I'm kidding.
Fuck you. We're warming up.
Yeah, no, it gets dicier.
That's true. These takes get hotter as we go.
I certainly agree that Web3 is going to be on everyone's lips this year.
That's true.
There are going to be tons of corporates investing in the metaverse. One of the things people are concerned about is whether it's just going to replicate existing dynamics or whether it's going to be broader and more egalitarian.
You saw what Jack Dorsey tweeted?
Oh, yeah, he said it's going to replicate the...
I'm with you on that. The whole thing's a problem. If it looks like our venture community now, Web3 hasn't done shit. It's the exact same thing. Like meet the new boss just like the old boss. Right? Like it's what it is. Like nothing.
Anytime I do meet someone in Web3 who is clearly not one of the old bosses, though, it does make me happy.
I agree.
When I do run into them and I'm happy about them.
There is the decentralization thing is exciting. The universal basic income and let's call it monetary access and the reaching the unbanked and things like that. That upside's remarkable, like what we were talking about. But if you're just talking about a bunch of rich kids or semi-rich kids getting more rich, living, you know, at home in a basement and becoming crypto millionaires and then just buying real estate in the metaverse, I don't know if that's really changing much. I don't mean to be mean. I love you guys. I don't know. Well, okay. So like I'm seeing like this is what and like I want someone to come and I want you guys to respond to this, whether you watch this on YouTube or come at me on Twitter, but like I'm seeing people pay outrageous prices in the metaverse for digital real estate or Gucci bags and stuff like this. And I'm like, so we're going to have the same, like all the problems we have with our current real life world are going to be just as bad in the metaverse. Like it's not new in the new one.
Someone who is into Web3 said something to me that stuck with me. Said that it's social signaling. And then when you reflect for a moment on just how many things we do that are in essence social signaling, then you start to think, okay, what are the limits? Mm-hmm. And the limits are theoretically infinite.
Yeah, unlimited. Yeah.
In that sense, you know, and it's funny because, you know, we're broadcasting this from Manhattan. And there are so many things that people do in New York City that are social signaling.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's real. People can spend money on it. It's real. I'm just saying we have this awesome opportunity to change, to start over in a way, and it doesn't seem like we are.
One of the encouraging things I've found from talking to folks in this space is that some people are catching on that Web3 needs to tackle more real world problems.
Mm.
And I'm seeing some very encouraging initiatives in that dimension where they're trying to tackle climate change in some cases, economic inequality and poverty in other cases.
Right.
So that stuff's great. And anyone who's doing things like that, you know, we're going to try and help.
Yeah. That is my prediction, is not that Web3 and blockchain and crypto continue the hype. That's not my prediction. My prediction is Web3 becomes more real world.
It starts to interact with the real world
application. So I think verified credentials, which is basically eliminating the need for your paper insurance card or your paper airline ticket or your driver's license and doing that online in a very verified, secure way. And we've actually had an episode on that on this podcast. That stuff is fascinating to me. And I think it'll become more and more mainstream. My dream is when you can go to a rental car place, when you go to Hertz, go pick up your rental card and you scan your phone and you don't have to wait in line and talk to a person. It's all verified right there. Because what are they verifying? That you want your insurance, that you're a real human being, that you have your driver's license, and that you're you, right? And you have a credit card. You could do that theoretically on the blockchain very quickly and not have to sit in line and wait for the person and this sort of thing. So don't know if that happens this year, but I think smaller applications of that start happening, and it's pretty exciting.
This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech, who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit, generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side, where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang. Okay, it is time for the big news-making prediction of this pod. This is it.
Okay.
There will be a significant third-party presidential candidate that declares in 22.
This is not you declaring for president right now, are
this
you?
Is not me declaring right okay. now, but this is me declaring that someone will declare in 22.
I do declare.
For the presidency.
Someone's going to run as a third party.
Someone's going to run as a third party.
And they'll announce in 2022.
And they're going to announce in 22. Wow. I even think they're going to announce before the midterms.
Wow.
Well, the midterms are in November. But hear me out on this. Mm-hmm. So let's say you are a relatively significant third party candidate looking at this field. Mm-hmm. And you would see, okay, Joe Biden, 42-43% popularity. On the other side, you have Trump coming up. Mm-hmm. Now, what is your cost benefit to waiting until after the midterms? If you wait until after the midterms, then the oxygen will start going towards both Trump and, let's say, Joe. And it's going to be potentially less advantageous to you to be declaring later if you declare earlier. And if you return to the bygone days of Yang 2020, we declared in February of 2018, mm-hmm. which would be the equivalent of February 22.
It's like declaring in 4 weeks.
What a 4 years.
For 2024.
Yes. So why did we make that decision? Well, we didn't have any, at the time, we didn't have any notoriety or recognition. So if you have some time, you might as well spend it stumping around New Hampshire and Iowa, going mm-hmm. around, in our case, it was the Midwestern, Mid-Atlantic Humanity First Tour. If you were a third-party contender, you might as well get a jump on it. Mm-hmm. You can use this time. Let's say you don't hold elective office. You don't necessarily need to be bound to some, you know, geography or role. So you might as well hit Iowa summer 22. So might as well declare a little bit early and like get some oxygen. Though a third party candidate doesn't necessarily even need to start out in Iowa, New Hampshire, because they're not running in the primaries. So they can go wherever they like. They can mm-hmm. just make their case. They can do podcasts. So there will be a third party candidate who declares in all likelihood before the midterms, but definitely before year end.
They're taking a page out of the Andrew Yang playbook.
Yeah.
If you will.
And do I also have a little bit of, like whispering in the wind coming my way on this?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure people are telling you. Hint, hint. But that's good. So one of the things we learned when we were running for president was I mean, a whole bunch of things, geez. But the big one was that the mainstream media that normally drives narratives, they're now way more reactive, right? They didn't realize Bernie was a thing until he was drawing massive crowd. They didn't realize you were a thing until you were already, you know, doing well. So there's a world, you're saying, that's an independent candidate can go build up his or her notoriety on all these alternative media, build up a massive following, and then who knows what that means come polling time, right?
Yeah, if you were a third party candidate and you ran the numbers, you'd be like, okay, if I wait, how does that play out? Mm-hmm. If I go early, how does that play out? And it's not just the media. I mean, you'd get a chance to build and hone your message. You'd get a chance to build relationships with various people mm-hmm. on the ground. Right now, because of the discontent with both parties, if you were a credible third party candidate, you could probably meet with like a whole slew of people. It'd be like, well, I should at least see if this person's legit. So someone who's in this vein, I think, is going to make the plunge or take the plunge sometime this year,
right.
probably before the midterms again.
That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll get them to, are they going to run as an independent, or can you convince them to run as a forward party? Forwardist?
Well, I'm saying that the person will be running as a non-Democrat, non-Republican.
Got it. Who knows what they run as? Cool.
Yeah.
This is exciting. Will anyone else declare? And I say this because I want to make sure we remember this. This is important. Never forget, Andrew, that John Delaney ran for president and aired a Super Bowl ad in 2018. You remember this?
I do remember.
Yes. And as someone who's run and managed presidential campaign budgets, that is a horrific way to blow a few million dollars of your presidential budget during the Super Bowl when your national name ID is approximately zero. Do you think any Dems pull a John Delaney, not the Super Bowl thing, but declare really early that are mainstream Dems or are on a major party line or something like that?
There was a story that came out in Politico this weekend about this very thing. Will Joe attract a primary challenger?
Yeah.
And this is one apparent effect of Build Back Better not passing, is that the discontent among Democrats is higher than it would have been if they'd gotten this bill passed. Now, I happen to think Build Back Better is going to be resuscitated. There's going to be a version of it. It's going to keep moving forward over this next period of time. But this Politico story, there are two things I'd like to say. One, the Politico story is trying to manufacture this energy in a way, because that loves to try and they love to try and set people into ideological camps, mm-hmm. and like the article was framed as like, is the left like going to
the left
challenge
Shiv Joe Biden,
and then Joe has had a relationship and he reached out to this what the article suggested, I believe correctly, is that there is room for someone to come and challenge Joe in a Democratic primary. Now, the person's going to be very, very far out of the Democratic establishment, because you can imagine anyone who's part of the establishment does not want to challenge Joe.
You want to be that guy.
Yeah, you want to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
But will someone, if someone did decide to run against Joe in a Democratic primary, do they get 20%? If they're credible, I believe they do. Maybe better.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the fascinating dynamic of this primary challenge, is that any legit primary challenge to a sitting president is very, very damaging to that sitting president, regardless of whether it's successful or not.
Right.
And so this is one reason why Obama was deeply concerned about Bernie challenging him in 2012, not because he thought Bernie would win, but because it's very, very damaging. And so if someone runs against Joe in the Democratic primary, I don't think they declare necessarily this year. They might declare at the end of this year after the midterms, like December 22.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do run against Joe, there are a certain number of people that will support them in that endeavor, you know, among the Democratic primary electorate, just because Joe might not have been their person. If you look at, for example, Iowa, Joe did not do well there.
Right.
So there are a lot of people who supported someone else. Mm-hmm. Most of them will now be on board with Joe because he's the president, he's the leader of the party. But will there be 20% of people who are excited about an alternative? Probably yes.
Of course.
And so maybe more, like 20 could be low.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are a person who's on the outside of the establishment and you see that lane, do you decide to take it? Probably. So probably someone does decide to challenge Joe, who's a non-establishment right. figure.
If you're a mainstream...
I don't know if that happens this year, though.
Right. If you're a mainstream progressive, if you're AOC or Ilhan or, you know, a member of the squad or some of the bigger names, it probably doesn't make sense because you're not going to win. It'll make it look like your move, because you're facing the movement. It'll make it look like Joe is squashing your movement. But if you're maybe a lesser known progressive that wants to bump their name ID out there and fight for a lot of the same policies, it could make sense, because then you bump your name ID, you'll probably see it. Someone's going to do it. Oh, boy. Man, we're in for a fun couple of years, man.
Well, this is again why I say I appreciate this year, because
yeah, we won't have to deal with nonsense.
Like after the midterms, all hell's gonna break loose.
Oh, we'll have so much to talk about.
You know, we have 11 months of relative sanity.
Oh boy!
But okay. I believe someone probably declares, and that person who declares, you know, there'll be some attention to them. They'll make some progress during that time. If I was advising that person, I think that it's not a bad move, having been through it myself.
I mean, especially if it's not going to be a crowded field, which it's not going to be, because I think, I mean, maybe, but if Joe says he's not running, but this looks like he's going to be running, then it probably won't be that crowded. Then you get more attention and more, and you actually get speaking time, the debate stages. You know, if you're one of the three or four other candidates running.
You know, it's wild to just visualize this for a second. I just wanted to play this out, what you just said, because I disagree with it, by the way.
Okay, lay it on me.
Which is that you imagine that Joe's going to have to debate whoever this person is.
Oh, you're saying it won't happen.
I don't think that's a thing.
They won't let him on.
Like, I highly doubt it's a thing. And like, if you were the Democrats, would you want your 81-year-old president to come and like stand there for like, you know, an hour and debate like progressive TBD?
But we're Democrats, right? So play it out. Okay, so it's the Democratic primary. There's a bunch of people running, or a couple people running. You're Jamie Harrison, who's progressive, right? He's head of the DNC. You've got a woman of color running against Joe Biden. You're going to say she's silenced and doesn't get to debate him? That's a tough spot for Jamie, right?
I don't know.
They're gonna like these are the like,
yeah. That is an interesting consideration. But I don't. So just so you know, like I don't think that there are. There definitely will be Republican debates.
Yeah, those will be fun. Those are always fun. They drop the gloves in the Republican debates, which are hilarious. The Democrats are a little more subtly mean.
Yeah, and we can return to what we think the Republican field will be. But if you rewind to the 2016 race, when Trump beat Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Chris Christie, Jeb Bush, like you can imagine sort of like a smaller version of that, because that field was open and Trump wasn't as dominant then as he is now. Like there are going to be a bunch of candidates who do not run against Trump because they see much more downside than upside.
Yeah. And then look, Trump stomps you in those debate stages. I mean, we studied him when we were preparing for our debates. Say what you want about Donald Trump, he's a very, very good debater. I mean, debating is the wrong term, but it's about the attention economy. He's great at keeping the spotlight on him and telling you to shut up.
Yeah, so if you're a third-party candidate, I guess what I'm suggesting to you, Zach, is they don't actually show up on any debate stage until the general election, which won't be until fall 24. And right now the rules are that person would need to get higher than 15% to make that debate stage.
But I meant if you're progressive, but you're running as a Dem.
I think that person probably – I think if someone's a strong third-party contender, they probably surpass 15%.
They can get 15%, yeah. But if you're a progressive running to challenge Joe Biden on the Democratic ticket, would there be a debate? And you're saying they won't let him do it.
I don't think
they're right. That would be fun to watch.
This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out. out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product, and if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Let's go to next prediction. My first one was optimistic about Web3. My next one is darker. Maybe we'll talk about this out loud, but my prediction is continued social decline. And I really, another way is like, there's all these crazy stats, and I think they're
going
to come
really
to
going
roost.
On a limb again, Zach.
Oh, man. They're not that hot. This is hotter, though. I don't know. My prediction is some form of civil unrest, even before the election.
So you got to get specific, Zach, because, there's a lot of stuff that's going to go on.
You're right. It's going to be a hot mess. But here's my, New York Times wrote something today about, I sent it to Andrew because we had a speech from when you ran for president called The Kids. You said the kids are not all right. And it was basically about how adults have put themselves in front over the adult needs over the children's needs.
Or the next generation is going to have it worse than the previous generation. I think everyone knows that.
But the numbers in this article were awful, and they're always awful. And so it takes a lot to shock me now. But suicide attempts by 12 to 17 year old girls, which are already skyrocketing, were up 51% in the pandemic. 51%! They were already through the fucking roof! Awful, awful, awful. And to me, you and I have been, you've written a book about it, you've run campaigns on it. We've been studying this shit since 2017, let's say, right? And some of it's come to roost, and I think it's exponentially going to get worse. And so I don't know what that means. I think realistically it plays out with like more real life Karens and fights on Black Friday and fights in retail stores and people being miserable in public. And probably comes to a head in 2024 election. But I think we're just going to be collectively more miserable. It's like a fear of mine until we kind of set some collective mission together as a country. But I just seeing these stats, whether it's automation or employment or mental health or these sort of things, they're getting worse. Something comes to a head at some point. I think it comes to a head in 2022. That's dark.
I think that there are going to be massive mental health challenges for young people in particular. I think a year plus away from schooling has been really destructive for a lot of kids. I think my kids have fared okay, relatively speaking, because they're young. But you know, I talk to kids at different ages and their parents, and it's like, oh my gosh, I forgot that you'd like missed junior year of high school or whatever the heck it is. I mean, they're like different things that have happened to different people. So you're not wrong. I do feel really bad for the next generation. I felt bad for the next generation back in 2017, 2018.
When you would talk about millennials. You know?
I mean, we've left them a bill of goods in terms of an ability to live a good life for themselves. And there are so many young people that aren't having kids or aren't getting married because they're looking at it being like, oh, one of my prospects. Mm-hmm. They look up, they see climate change, like, you know, and you like talk yourself into a bunch of things. Whereas, you know, like people weren't having those kinds of conversations,
right?
Like a number of years ago.
I was at a wedding this weekend, New Year's Eve wedding, by the way, really fun, highly recommend. But it was a group of, I think everybody was around my age, a little younger. But they said some interesting, and the premise of what they were saying wasn't 100% true, but I'm curious your thoughts on this because I want to frame it to you. Girl said, what is the hardest thing our parents' generation had to deal with on the macro level? And what she was saying was that the millennial generation or Gen Z have now had to deal with, you know, you start with 9/11 and the 2008 financial crash, then the pandemic, as those are like massive, and throw climate change in there. These are massive existential foundation breaking moments or crises. And my parents' generation, We're like, did they have anything anywhere at that near that scale? I think the answer is no. But what we landed on, like somewhat facetiously laughing, is like, yeah, but a lot of them had some real trauma with their parents and never ever talked about their problems, or like the way we do, you know, so much like, oh yeah, yeah, never spoke to my father or whatsoever, right? Like the, like I do think they have it as easy as I'm saying. But my my question for you is, I mean, that same question, like, is, you know, it's you're probably between where my parents are and what I am. You got 10 or so years on me, but
Gen X, baby. What,
yeah, baby. You guys got that, like, that little sweet spot. A lot of the things, and we joke about this all the time, a lot of things that were like facts, like you'll just work hard and get to college and pay off and buy a house. Like those things are just not only breaking down, they're essentially broken now. Are we overreacting there? Or is it as bad as I'm saying?
By the numbers, we have set up younger people to fail at much higher levels than certainly was the case at any earlier point. And so the numbers that I had, that I used, were that if you were born in the 1950s, I think there's like a 91% chance that you're going to do better than your parents did. If you're born in the 90s, then that's down to a 50-50 shot. And I think we know where that's trending. I think it's just kind of, did you go down? So, and that's the definition of the American dream, you know, like, are you going to do better than your parents? And a lot of kids are growing up being like, don't think I am going to do better than my parents. A lot of parents are like, don't think you're going to do better than me. And like, it's a shitty place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm the child of immigrants. My dad said something to me when I was a kid. He said, it's not about how you're doing. It's about what direction you think you're going.
Mm.
So it's like, if you take someone who's like, you know, really struggling, but things are getting better, then they're like, all right.
That's true.
You know, like, if you take someone who's really affluent and then you put them on a downward slope, they're going to be pissed off and angry like the entire time.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening now in America for a lot of young people. They look and say, like, you know, I don't think things are trending up for me. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they're generally not.
Right.
So, like, so that this is what's fueling a lot of the sadness, the anger, the despair. And a lot of this stuff was true pre-COVID. COVID just made it much, much worse.
It's accelerated, right?
Yeah.
We did a whole episode on...
And it's really screwed up people's sense of well-being, you know? It's like, I mean, you'd have to be extraordinarily resilient not to have felt that over this last period of time.
Right, right, right.
So again, not sure about the value of this prediction, Zach. You know? Like, hey, people are
too obvious.
Like, yeah,
everything's like, going to shit.
Or you would need something very concrete to measure whether this prediction pays off. So I'm just going to put the pressure back on you. But I'm on to my third prediction, which is going to be much more positive. I think this is the last year of the pandemic. I think 2022, pandemic over. And here's my thinking.
Okay.
Number one is that pandemics typically last 3 years or so. And you're not going to believe this, people, but this is the third fucking year. Like, it starts in 2020, then 2021. This is 2022. This is year three of the pandemic. So most pandemics will run their course around this time of this time period. Number two, Omicron is everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
We just all have to accept that we're all going to get it.
I'm going to break some more news. I'm pretty sure I had Omicron.
I'm sure we both have it. You know? This studio is just crawling in Omicron.
And in my case, you know, I'd had COVID before. I was vaccinated, like everything else. So, you know, it was really, really mild. But this thing is everywhere. And so if you have a very, very infectious strain, then it ends up developing herd immunity pretty quickly because, you know, it's going to get to everyone. I'm happy to say everything I've seen and what I'd experienced, like, this is pretty mild.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just have cold symptoms and then we're like, was that Omicron? And it's like, yeah, and like it might have been. In my case, I was mildly fatigued for like a couple of days and I was like, was that Omicron?
Like, well, now you can't really, in certain cities, like in New York, it's very difficult to test right now. Very difficult.
It's a problem. Number two is that I think Omicron is going to spread everywhere and it's going to give everyone some degree of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that this is going to help bring about the end of the pandemic. Number three is that we're all at the end of our rope.
Yes.
And so that there really is no possibility of having folks continue to adopt various countermeasures beyond something that's relatively easy because people are exhausted.
Yes.
So I think that The pandemic ends in 22.
It's kind of split on party lines a little bit. You're seeing it now, though, where you have everything's open but schools because the teachers union doesn't want to do it. The Knicks, the Jets, the Giants in New York, they're all packing their stadiums, but certain places you can't gather more than, you know, certain places still have to feel like they're socially distanced. Like you're seeing somewhat like a little bit of hypocrisy and like or distancing on some ends, but not. But I think to your point, we'll get to Wits End. I think it's a good prediction. Really going out on a limb there.
Well, and you know, people aren't saying that one. To me right now, like the main thing you have to be concerned about, in my view, is the capacity of the healthcare system. It's like if the, mm-hmm. you know, and when we talk about Omicron numbers, like the only number we should be focusing on is hospitalization.
Yes.
Like if 1,000 people have mild cold symptoms and no one ends up in the hospital, fine.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like if your hospital is beyond capacity and it can't do elective procedures and healthcare workers are burning out right now, that's a major problem.
Yeah. And if people in the hospital usually means people are dying, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's your, but if we're keeping people out of the hospital, these are wins. Yeah. These are wins. We should be celebrating. I agree. That's the best pick. That 2022 is the end of the pandemic. Called it here. You heard it here first, Yang Gang, and anybody who listens to this. I think we've broadened beyond the Yang Gang, which is exciting. All right, one pick that we both agree on, we don't have to go crazy on this, but I had a point, was that Republicans are going to roll in the midterms.
So do they get the Senate too or just the House?
I think they take both.
Zach thinks they take both.
What do you
I
think?
Concur.
Yeah. I have here, this is what I wrote down though. I was writing about this in my book. I took it out because I think it might be too short term. But I do think, because I wanted the book to like stand a longer test of time, but I do think
Zach's writing a book, everyone comes
I'm
out.
Writing a book. We're gonna talk about it more and more. May 24th, I think, in May. I think we start to see a rise of crazy moderates. Now hear me out and I'm what your thoughts on this. I think Eric Adams is a fun example. But in the sense that if the whole system is incentivizing people to go far right and far left, the average, let's not the average vote, let's say the average general voter, the average human being is gonna be craving for people with just moderate or nuanced views, right? And we're gonna be craving them so much that we will overlook aspects of crazy that we normally would be turned off by, but because they're not, like when it comes to being a leader, they're more moderate, more flexible, we'll tolerate it. So for example, Eric Adams is a pretty weird dude. Like, I mean, look at Google Eric Adams rats. Like he went on a tirade on, he literally drowned rats in poison at a city council meeting. Like this guy does, he does weird shit all the time. But he's a moderate. He's tough on crime. The Democrats are desperate for, and they're into that. And it's, you could go down the list. You could, I believe you're going to start to see like it's crazy and radical to be a moderate in politics, at least for a little bit, as we kind of sift out this far right, far left, hyperpolarization world. I don't know what you think. Maybe Eric's not. Maybe New York's an anomaly. I'm not sure.
So one of the things that gets confusing too is that if you look at the numbers, it's not like Eric got a mandate coming in, you know what I mean? Like, I forget what.
Yeah, he won his base, right?
Yeah, yeah. Unclear what lessons you can draw from him individually.
Mm.
Are there more, I think the word you're looking for is zany.
Yeah.
Like kind of zany moderates.
Yeah, where like you just overlook the like, something that would have killed a politician earlier, but the fact is they're like, well, they're, you know, they're socially liberal and fiscally conservative or something moderate.
So which party are you thinking these people come out of?
Great question. It's probably going to be more Republicans. But well, I think it may happen in the Democrats.
You know what would be your example of this person, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Mehmet Oz.
Oz, yes. Good example. If he can come in, I don't know where his poll is going to be at.
He's a Republican, Pennsylvania.
Yep. If he's going to talk sane.
Is that a candidate?
Say some things that isn't extremely pro-Trump. But isn't, you know,
so you're suggesting a riot. So this is a different point than the point you were making, but we can go to someplace a little bit different.
This is, I wanted to talk it out.
So
man.
This is celebrities because Mehmet Oz is objectively a celebrity. There are people that are getting courted to run for president because they're celebrities. I mean, Donald Trump was obviously a celebrity, you know. So will there be an openness to celebrities? I'm going to say yes to that. And I think Trump's running in 24. I think he's the heavy favorite front runner in the Republican field, and probably the overall front runner if you were to do it today.
Yeah.
And so if that's your context, are you looking for maybe another celebrity to go out?
I think, like, I don't know. So celebrity is interesting because we've had celebrities. We've had Jesse Ventura. We had Schwarzenegger. We've had – and then, you know, Caitlyn Jenner got stomped. But she's one of the most recognizable names on the planet, right? But I do think it's about – a platform overall. It's like why Mayor Pete was able to run with no real name ID, but he was a mayor, so that was something. He was like, it's almost like you just need something to, like, being a celebrity isn't it, but something where you have a platform or something to latch on to.
Well, what's talk interesting about is I think both the Dems and Republicans respond differently to celebrities.
That's true. That is true.
And so in the Dem world, you know, having mayor next to your name is a
substantially big deal. Better than actor.
Yeah. Whereas Republicans, like, don't care. It's one reason why there are a lot of Republicans who like me, and the Democrats would be like, "Oh, you know, like,
you need
haven't
more
held
government
office."
Experience.
And the Republicans are like, "Hey, dude, ran a business and has done some things, and no talk sense. I'm into it." So it's one of the overall dynamics that the Democrats are going to be the last of the institutionalists.
Mm-hmm.
This is one reason why I individually or forward, it's like it's kind of its own thing. And the Republicans are the anti-institutionalists. And you're in a time when, by the way, the institutions are not exactly kicking ass.
They're not thriving.
They're failing, many of them. And so in a way, what you need is kind of benign outsiders, but the Democratic Party will be hostile towards even benign outsiders, which is one reason why people are frustrated. I'm actually going to say something funny. I think Bernie is a benign outsider.
Benign to who?
Well, he's just well-intended. He wanted, wanted to do things to help people. And the Democratic Party is trying to, you know, kneecap him
right
at every turn.
Yep.
Like, you know, whereas the Republicans just kind of generally like outsiders. They're like, yeah, you know, come in. And in my view, Trump is, you know, the wrong type of outsider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the opposite of the benign one. But that there is like, you know, who else I actually will also say was, like, to me, a benign outsider?
Mm-hmm.
Tom Steyer.
Yeah. We used to joke about this when we were running. Government has not been run very well in decades. Yet, in order to win a Democratic primary or race, you have to have experience running these poorly run institutions.
Well, I made a joke about it in my book, which was that, like, it's that the test is like, how can we be sure that you also will get nothing done? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I forgot about that joke.
Yeah, the people take, like, kind of fake credit for, like, oh, under my watch, like, these things happen. I passed this bill that no one's ever
heard of. Yeah. You know? We increase funding to XYZ. He was like, man, that increases every year with or without you, you know?
I've seen a whole flurry of stories now that are waking up to the fact that democracy is in jeopardy. We're heading towards some version of civil unrest, certainly in 24 at the latest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that people are like, wait a minute, like, things aren't working so well. Like, there are more people who are waking up to that.
Yeah.
Now, there's a Vox article about this just yesterday. Now, the tough part is that it's getting cast in partisan terms again, because it's like, hey, the Republicans are trying to, you know, keep people from voting, like, you know, veer towards authoritarianism. And then the Democrats are being framed as, like, the saviors of democracy and the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I'm not so sure about that. Like, another way out of this would be to actually just go multi-party. you know what I mean? And, like, make it so that one party having terrible leadership doesn't imperil the entire project, imperil the entire system.
Yep.
Really, the duopoly is the problem. Now, I do think the issues in each party are very different from each other, but there are issues. So that's a dynamic that I'm actually sort of encouraged by, because people are like, wait a minute, like, we really can't take any of this stuff for granted going into 24.
Which I am optimistic on that, the fire has been lit under, you know,
well, the alarm has been set.
Yeah, the alarm has been set.
People are alarmed.
Yeah, people are waking up to it. I agree with that.
The question is, like, what is the call to action? And a lot of folks are like, the call to action is like, defeat Republicans. And then you're like, well, you know, maybe you have to think a little deeper than that. It's like that, you know, like,
that's the tribalism, right?
It's, yeah, yeah. And part of it might also be, it's like, and, you know, also being objective, it's like, maybe like, defeat Republicans just plain isn't going to work.
Right. It hasn't been working, but anyway.
Well, it's, you know, both of us think it's not going to work in 22.
Right.
And then if you wind up with a Republican held House or Republican held both houses of Congress, then obviously nothing's going to get done out of Washington for the next 2 years. And then you kind of stagger into another election.
My last,
you're making extra bonus predictions. Go
I
ahead.
I have one more.
Wrap it, yeah.
But I want
do
your
it.
I want your thoughts on it.
Okay.
I want your thoughts on censorship in 2022, because I think we had talked about the new Twitter CEO is going to be more
prone to ban people.
Proactive on banning people. Marjorie Taylor Greene just got kicked off Twitter after her fifth strike, and then so Dan Crenshaw, who's a Republican, I think he's relatively moderate Republican. But he said something interesting. He doesn't like Marjorie Taylor Greene at all, and he said, this is a scam, because here's what happens. Twitter sets the rules to kick you off their like what you need to do to get kicked off. If you're Marjorie Taylor Greene, you break them every time. And every time you get booted, you raise money saying that you're being silenced. And it's a scam. And so my high level prediction is that I think big tech or the government is going to be forced to into these censorship conversations that a lot of folks don't want to have, because they're sticky and they're not fun. I'm more of a free speech guy. I think less censorship is usually better. But I think everybody's stuck between a rock and a hard place on here, because there are elected officials saying horrific things. There is Fox News approving horrific things and have been for a while, right? And even our mainstream, you know, you can go MSNBC, CNN. There's a whole bunch of issues with our media and entertainment in this, like, government overlap. Thoughts on, does this come to a head in 2022? Any predictions on how this plays out this year as politics starts heating up too?
This is going to be an issue in 22, but I think it's going to be a much bigger deal in 23.
Yeah.
After Trump redeclares, and then is everyone going to then be like, well, can't ban a dude who's running for office again.
Right. The people have elected, yeah.
And then maybe he becomes the nominee again, and that won't happen until 24. And then it's like, well, you certainly can't take it away from the nominee. So I think it's going to be an issue in 22. I think it's going to be a bigger issue immediately afterwards.
I guess, like, the prediction is, like, buckle up for censorship conversations. It's I think the free speech, our principles of free speech are going to be tested
I do have a different perspective on this too.
Yeah.
It's like, people like complain about what Twitter does. Twitter's a private company. The government is its own category,
mm-hmm.
but people act like Twitter is, you know, somehow public commons. It's not.
And to be fair, like, Donald Trump says, I don't like what Twitter does. I'm going to make my own right wing Twitter. And I think
that's allowed too.
That's fine. Yeah. Yeah. As long as, you know, you're not, you know, promoting violence or whatever our basic rules are. The hardest part to me is, I think, the average person not paying attention, not knowing what's getting cut out or what's getting kept in, I think is always the hardest part. Where we said, when we had run for office, where you were left off or ignored in certain ways, like, the average person watching is relying on these entertainment companies for news. I think that's the hardest part, right? And I think people are waking up to that. And I think there's more we can do in the alternative media space and podcasts like this, but that's the challenge. But I'm buckled up for a censorship. I don't want to say war, censorship debate in 2022.
I would agree with you that there is much, much more questioning of the mainstream media even than ever. Yeah. You know, they have like a splintering, then you have growth of various alternative voices. You know, Joe Rogan's the most prominent,
right.
And you see that Joe Rogan is very much just like actively going against certain mainstream media narratives, and like, the antagonism is really interesting in the sense that, like, I think that now it's explicit in a way that before they were almost on like parallel tracks and like mm-hmm. different worlds. Mm-hmm. And then now you can see like the streams crossing and clashing to a higher degree.
I'm reading The Loudest Voices in the Room, the story of basically how Roger Ailes built Fox News. I'm only into chapter one right now, chapter two, something there. But these are versions of their massive power structures is what I think that's the hardest part, right? They have swayed elections and popular opinion, and they're highly profitable. It's like this capitalism and government power wielding all come into one, right? And that's what's in some ways disintegrating, in some ways evolving, in some ways changing. So anyway, more to come on that for sure. That's our prediction episode, man.
2022. What did I say?
Let's recap.
Inflation sticks around.
Yep.
There's a third party candidate who declares this year, and it's the end of the pandemic.
That's pretty good. And I say Web3 mainstreams a bit. We have a bit of a mental health social decline. And sadly, the Republicans are going to win the midterms. That's an easy one. And then maybe censorship. We're not sure what happens in censorship, but I think we have a debate. Anyway, good episode. It's going to be a good year. This is our year, Andrew.
This is the year. Enjoy 2022. Really. Do some great stuff. Give yourself something to look forward to. I am pumped for this year. Woo! You are too.
See you next week, folks.